103 temperature, and my mom refuses to let me out of the house. Not that I put up much of a fight. The last thing I want to do is go to school today, or tomorrow, or ever again. Really, all I want to do is fly up into the stars with Logan. But it's simple. I can't have what I want. That's it. Well, it wouldn't be the first time in the history of mankind that a 15-year-old girl in the middle of nowhere didn't get what she wanted. I'm sure there are thousands of 15-year-old girls who had exactly the opposite of what they wanted, like getting burned at the stake, for instance, or getting married off to an 80-year-old man in a trade for some sheep. No, this is a first-world problem, as the vampire would say. The answer, he would say, is getting good grades. The vampire must be reading my thoughts now because, as if on cue, he calls and demands to speak to me. I have spoken to your mother, and she says you are sick. Is that true? Yes, Dad, I'm sick.
Is that all?
Yeah.
There is something wrong with you. What is the matter?
I don't know, Dad. I'm just upset about something.
Is it a boy?
Kinda.
Are you pregnant? You are not allowed to get pregnant.
No, Dad. God, no. I'm not. Jeez, how embarrassing.
Okay, good. Because that would ruin your life. You understand?
Yes, Dad.
Is it interfering with your grades? You cannot let any of these insignificant dramas get in the way of your grades. That is the most important. You understand?
Yes, I do.
Are you sure?
Yes, Dad, my grades are fine. I'm even tutoring the other kids in computer programming.
That is good, although I'm not sure you want to be a computer geek.
Dad, where did you even learn that word?
Oh, come on. I do not live in the Dark Ages, contrary to popular belief.
Okay, Dad.
If I think there is any indication that you are jeopardizing your future in that godforsaken place, I will not hesitate to bring you back here to Princeton, where I have unlimited resources to educate you at the best private schools this country has to offer. In fact, it may be more appropriate.
Dad, it's not hurting my grades. I promise.
Even that overinflated physical education instructor? Has he seen fit to give you an A? Or is he under the deluded impression that his meaningless little life would be given gravitas by giving a 10th grade straight-A student a B for not jumping rope to his liking?
No, I think I turned him around, Dad.
Good. Okay, well, I have to catch a plane to Geneva. I am doing a conference there. I will send you a postcard.
Okay, Dad.
Remember, I have the means here to give you a first-rate education. If you ever decide you want to leave that horrible place, I would be glad to assist you in that endeavor. Plus, there might be something to be said for having quality time with your father before you die. Now, goodbye.
And with that, my father, the vampire, is off the phone and off to Switzerland. And then Prague. Then maybe Leningrad. You'll never know where he is until you get the postcard. Spires and turrets and gargoyles staring down from somewhere in the middle of Europe. And a note.
Annika, here is a picture of Vienna. I have a speaking engagement here. Big kiss. Per.
Per. That's French for Dad. That little French word is the closest we will ever get to affection. My mom comes in after I hang up the phone to assess the damage. She knows by now that one phone call from the vampire can devastate me for days, if he chooses to turn that withering sense of humor on me, to eviscerate, which is his skill set. The one thing about the vampire, stay on his good side, but don't try to get too close. If you do, he'll bite you. My mom sits next to me on the bed.
Everything all right?
Yeah.
Did you know I got a letter for you?
What? When?
This morning. It's from Oakland. Do you know anybody from Oakland?
No, Mom, definitely not.
Honey, is there something you're not telling me?
No, Mom.
Okay, here it is. Now get back to bed. You need your rest.
And there it is. A letter from Oakland. Who the hell lives in Oakland? I've never even been west of Colorado. I snuggle up in my sheets and open it. It's from Tiffany. Dear Annika, well, I made it. I'm in Oakland, with my grandma. She was super happy to see me, and her place is really nice. It's got 2 floors and everything. Please don't tell anybody where I am, especially my mom, okay? I just wanted to write to you and say thank you. If it wasn't for you, I never would have made it here. I took the train. It was really pretty. We went through the mountains, and it was crazy. You've never seen so much snow. I was kind of scared a little. Like, if we got stuck, we'd have to eat each other. Well, bye for now. I just wanted to say thanks. Your friend, Tiffany. P.S. I feel grateful to you for what you did, but I have to admit, I still don't understand. Why would you take anything when you have everything you need right there in front of you? P.P.S. My grandma won't let me keep the money. She says it's bad luck, so here it is. I round it up so it wouldn't jingle in the mail. And there, behind the letter, exactly $1,237. God damn it. Even Tiffany, all the way out there in Oakland, knows better than me. What do you think? Do you think I should keep her secret? Her mom's probably freaking out. I mean, it kind of seems like a girl belongs with her mom, but maybe not that mom, I guess. Anyway, anything's better than that shit-ass place down by the interstate. Bullet point number 2. What am I supposed to do with this money? $1,237. I could keep it and add it to my college fund. Do I even have a college fund? My mom knocks on the door again. Honey, how are you feeling? Mom? Yes? Do you want to hear something stupid? I guess, honey. I stole $1,236.50 from the Bunza Hut, and now I don't even want it. Silence. What? Mom, I'm a thief. I'm a horrible person, and I know that you tried, but I'm a thief, and I stole all this money. Also, I used to scrape up your Valium and put it in Mr. Baum's Folgers. What? So he wouldn't be so mean to Shelley. I mean, he was, like, really mean to her. Honey, you can't just go around poisoning people. I know I'm a terrible person, and I know I'm going to jail, but could you please just forgive me, because I did it for a good cause. You stole for a good cause? Kinda. I'm not sure I'm following, honey. I gave it to Tiffany after she got busted, but she gave it back to me. See, I'm a failure. Even as a Robin Hood-like character of redemption, I have failed. Honey, okay. I'm gonna close this door, and we are gonna figure this out together. Okay? Okay. 55. My mom has me bundled up like a snowman, and we are driving up Sheridan Boulevard to Mr. Baum's house. And by house, I mean mansion. It's almost sunset, and the sun is shining through the trees before making its final exit. I guess, for this, she can let me out of the house, with a 103 temperature, where obviously I will catch pneumonia and die. Okay, you're gonna sit in the car, okay? Just stay put. I nod. My mother has suddenly become a spy in her own personal espionage thriller. Her tone is conspiratorial, and yes, she is wearing sunglasses and a trench coat. It suddenly dawns on me. Is my mom crazy? Maybe all this time I was not the only freak in the family. Maybe the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And maybe that tree is sitting right next to me in giant sunglasses and a trench coat. Okay, now, on the count of 3, I'm gonna run up there, leave the drop, and then we'll make a break for it. Drop. We're gonna leave the drop. Then we're gonna make a break for it. Seriously, what is happening? Meanwhile, Frosty the Snowman over here is bundled up to complete immobility. She keeps telling me to stay in the car, completely unaware that I have absolutely no choice in the matter. I couldn't move if the dashboard caught fire. Okay, ready now? 1, 2, 3. She scurries out and over the snow, a trench-coated figure in a sea of white. The path up the driveway leads to a cobblestone walk to the front door, a grand affair with two giant wooden doors and a wrought iron knocker. She makes the drop, turns around, and scurries back to the car. Inside, a dog starts barking. Shit, shit, shit! She jumps in, and suddenly we are peeling out backward as the front porch light of Mr. Baum's mansion goes on, and my mom speeds down Sheridan like she's Billy the Kid. I sit bundled in my snowman outfit, unable to move or remark, for that matter. I mean, the whole thing is so ludicrous, but I'm kind of in awe of my mother at this point. Also, I have now come to the happy conclusion that I get my specialness from her. Mystery solved. Although, to be honest, I will miss that $1,237 included in the drop. My mom keeps looking suspiciously in the rearview mirror. I can practically hear her heart beating from here. Okay, she exhales. I think we lost 'em. 56. 2 days later, and I'm still in bed with the flu or cold or probably cholera. I'm lying back in bed now, bundled. My mom has the sheets up and is taking my temperature. She takes out the thermometer. Okay, 99.3. That's better. She puts the thermometer away and fluffs up the pillows. You still have to rest, though, okay? You mean like don't go on any weird heists where we make a break for it? She smiles and tucks me under the blanket. Exactly. Mom? Yes, honey? Do you think that maybe you have a future in the Secret Service? My mom laughs. It's the dumbest thing in the world, but I feel like a huge anvil has been taken off my shoulders ever since we burned rubber out of Mr. Baum's driveway. Mom, I think you saved the day, kinda. What do you mean, honey? Well, like, I think that whole thing was really bothering me, like rotting my guts out or something. Oh, yeah? So let me ask you a question, then. Was it actually worth $1,000? $1,236.50. Okay. Was it worth that exact amount to feel like that? Mom, is this an after-school special? No. No, it's not. But I want to know. Was it worth it? Ugh. I hate it when anybody else is right. No, Mom, it wasn't. It was dumb. Okay, good. So now I don't have to worry about that anymore? No, you don't. Good, 'cause you could ruin your future. Then what would your father do? He'd probably go to Vienna. Oh, wait, he already did that. Just remember, no stealing. It's rude. Mom, want to hear something stupid? Please, no, I can't take another heist. I love you. My mom looks down at me. She gets a little weepy. Or maybe she's just tired. It's been 3 days of taking care of sicko me, not to mention the other 4 rapscallions around here. I love you too, honey. Just stop poisoning people. She kisses me on the forehead. Now go to sleep, little cubby. She tucks me in and shuts the door behind her. I can't seem to keep my head up with all this Tylenol and chicken soup she's plied me with. She's got me bundled up like an Eskimo with Vicks vapor rub slathered all over the place and a humidifier by the bed. My mom is not messing around when it comes to colds or flus. The ceiling is starting to turn into oatmeal, and I can't keep my eyes open even for a minute. Somehow the letter and the phone call and the haiku and the heist are all too much to think about, and my head goes clunk on the pillow. And suddenly, I'm staring at that crystal white painting from Logan. Maybe, if I'm lucky, I'll wake up in Geneva, or Zermatt, or Vienna. Maybe I'll wave to the vampire, and he'll wave back, if I'm getting straight A's. If I flunk, he'll keep walking. 57. In my dream, I'm standing on a sheet of snow, stretched out in a basin underneath the mountains of Switzerland. Behind me is the Matterhorn, and it's a bright blue sky, the color of a Tiffany box. It's me, but in a way it's not me standing there. Me in a white dress, and everything is white, white, white. It's the most beautiful place I've ever been, like a charmed crystal forest, and on the other side, coming out of the black, is Logan. He's standing there, and even though he's miles away, I can see him. See into his eyes. We're getting moved toward each other, like the snow basin is a conveyor belt, moving us together, and now we are closer, closer, and now we are close. Now he is right in front of me, and the sky is bright white, and it starts to snow. Just little pieces, little by little, snowflake by snowflake. And we both know that this is the most enchanted place in the world, this place between us. And he leans in, and I lean in, and it's a kiss, a chaste kiss, that becomes a not-so-chaste kiss, and now it's like we are turning into one thing, turning into each other, turning into the white light and the snowflakes, and we are light, 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 and just about to float up into the sky, up past the mountains and the Black Forest and the Matterhorn and up, 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 over the whole wide world. But then the Black Forest trees turn spiky and spindly and mean. They reach out from behind Logan and grab him with their arms, pulling him back, and the white snow basin caves in, and suddenly there is nothing, nothing underneath, and the black blade trees take Logan down, 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 and away, away, further. And I'm screaming, or I'm trying to scream, but nothing's coming out, and we're looking at each other, across the freezing ice abyss, and we're helpless, helpless, and no one can hear me. No one can see. And then I look to find him. I look everywhere around me, and through the ice and the tree branches and the snow forest. But he's gone. I wake up with a jump, and now I'm covered with sweat, and it's so quiet, you can hear your breath, and something's wrong. But nothing's wrong. It was just a dream. That was just a dream I had, but it was so real. It felt like more real even than this now, this here, that is real. The clock is blinking. 4:13. 4:13. 4:13. And stone cold silence. None of it was real. It was just a dream. Don't be silly. But there's something weird. There's something tugging me out of bed and down the hall. Down the hall, which seems now longer than I remember it, and I'm walking, like I'm sleepwalking, but no, now I'm awake. I'm awake now. This is my house. This is my hallway. That is my phone, and I pick up the phone. What am I doing? What the fuck am I doing? Oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm gonna call Logan. I'm gonna call Logan now and tell him I'm in love with him. And I know this now. I know this like I know the sky is blue, and I know the world is round, and I know the moon revolves around the earth revolves around the sun, and I can't wait to tell him. I can't wait to tell him, and it's gonna be just like that kiss in the snow cloud, and he and I are gonna be like light and air together. But it's 4:17. You can't call someone at 4:17. You can call them at 10 at night, maybe. Or maybe 9 in the morning if it's urgent, but not 4:17. You can't do that. That's just weird. Nobody will be up even, and then you'll just wake everybody. And what are you going to say? Put Logan on? Okay, thanks. Hey, Logan, I had a dream about a bunch of snow and I'm in love with you. No, no. Wait for tomorrow. Wait for tomorrow and tell him after school. Or before school. Or at school? Who gives a shit anyways? Just tell him at school. You're gonna tell him. You're gonna tell him at school. And then it'll be you and him together. 58. There's a TV on when I wake up, which is weird. It's about 5 a.m., which is weird. We're not a house that wakes up at 5 in the morning, and we're certainly not a house that's got the TV on at 5 in the morning. My mom makes sure of that. The TV goes on at night, after schoolwork, and even then just for a little bit. One show, maybe two. I mean, the ogre watches TV all night long after dinner, lets it put him to sleep every night. But not us. TV in the morning is not us. But it's on, and there's a commotion. There's voices and whispers and shushing, and then more and more of the TV. I can hear Lizzie and Nina. Henry just said something, and Robbie, too. My mom shushing them. All of them up at 5 in the morning.
Shush now. Shush up. Be quiet. Don't wake her.
Don't wake who? Don't wake who?
Don't wake me?
It has to be me. I'm the only her in the house that is not awake. I stand at the door and listen.
Shush, Lizzie. I mean it.
I peek out and Lizzie's got her hand over her mouth. So does Nina. Robbie is sitting down, and Henry looks pale as a ghost. Henry looks like someone just sucked all his blood out and replaced it with ice water.
You gotta tell her, Mom.
And now I can't take it.
What?
Tell me what? And I'm rushing into the room toward the TV, and they're parting between them, everyone but my mom, who tries to get in my way.
In the background, the TV blares.
It's a voice. An excited voice.
It's a news voice.
It's someone on the news.
Honey, listen, I think we should talk about this.
But I'm past her. I'm past Mom, and I'm past Lizzie, and Nina, and Henry, and Robbie. I'm past all of them, and in front of the TV, in front of the happy blonde hairstyle and sad news face and concerned, excited words coming out of the newscaster.
And she's in front of something, too.
The newscaster.
She's in front of something with sirens and cars and lights swirling.
She's in front of Logan's.
59. Pedaling fast, fast, fast.
This is the moment. One of those movie moments you never think is going to happen to you, but then it happens to you.
And now it's here.
Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is my only chance to stop it. This is a place where it looks like everything is going to go horribly wrong and there's no hope. But then because it's a movie, there is hope after all. And there was a surprise that changes everything, and everyone breathes a sigh of relief, and everybody gets to go home and feel good about themselves, and maybe fall asleep in the car.
Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is the moment.
This is the moment I get to remember for the rest of my nights, and my days, and my looking at the ceiling, over that hill, and down the next, through those trees, and past the school.
Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is the moment.
By the time I get there, you can see the lights going blue, red, white. Blue, red, white. Blue, red, white. Little circles diced up in sirens, and you think you can stop it. But of course you can't.
How could you ever think you could?
Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is the moment. This is the moment. And it's too late.
60.
By the time I skid my bike to a stop, the whole town's on Logan Street. The neighbors, the cops, the ambulances. Everywhere there's ambulances, and everywhere there's doctors and EMTs and IVs and bodies.
There's bodies.
There's bodies on the stretchers. One of the stretchers is going one way in a hurry, surrounded by EMTs and IVs and orders being barked. The other stretchers are going in the other direction.
More slowly.
There's nothing there. No urgency.
Nothing.
On the first stretcher, swarming with EMTs, there's a little sock. A little sock coming out with R2-D2. There's a little sock coming out, and I know that sock because that's Billy's sock, and he was wearing that sock the night Logan put him to bed. And now that sock is soaked with blood, and I can see it out of the blanket. Now that sock is soaked in blood. Now that stretcher is getting put in that ambulance, and I'm not the only one seeing that sock. And everyone has their hands to their mouths, because everybody is seeing that sock. And behind that stretcher, glued to that stretcher, are Logan's mom and Logan's kid brother, still in his camouflage sleeper. And his mom and his brother are hurrying in behind, glued to that stretcher, being carried away, too, light swirling round and round fast enough.
It's gone.
It's gone. That means hope. There's hope for that stretcher.
And now there's a second stretcher.
God, please stop pulling out stretchers from that house. But no one is listening. No one is listening. And here comes another one. This one is big. A big body. A big, big body. And something silent here. And that sheet is coming all the way up, and that stretcher is going slow. But that's two. That's two stretchers coming out from that house, and that's enough, Lord. Please, Lord, make that enough. But it's not enough. It's not enough. And now the front door opens, and it's one more. The front door opens, and it's one more. And there is that hand. And there are those feet. And that is the hand that tucked in those R2-D2 socks under those Star Wars sheets. That is the hand that tucked in that Spider-Man sleeper. That is the hand that reached out to me and pulled me next to him and flew me past the trees on his moped. That is the hand that I dreamed about last night. That is the hand on that body that was supposed to be next to me, on that body that I fell in love with, and that head and that heart, too. That is the hand, and it's not moving. It's not moving. 61. They're trying to grab me now. My mom and these people, some of them are in their bathrobes. They're trying to grab me and hold me back and get me out of here. They're trying to stop me from getting through this police tape. They're trying to stop me, but they can't stop me, because no one can stop me, because that's Logan. That's Logan over there on that stretcher, and that stretcher is covered in blood, and that stretcher is moving away, away, but it can't go away. You can't take him away. Please don't take him away. We were supposed to be together. And I'm on my knees now, and my mom and these people, who are all these people, have me by the shoulders, but I'm almost to Logan. I'm almost to Logan. I can touch him. I can touch him and bring him back to life. I can bring him back to life. I can. Just let me near him. But they've got me, and my mom's voice is coming out of somewhere. I can hear her. No, no, Annika. No, Annika, please. Just, please, honey. I'm here. I'm here. I've got you. I'm here. And the stretcher is gone. The stretcher has moved past me. The stretcher is going away, away, and in that door, and in that ambulance, and that door closes, and all is quiet. Everything is quiet now, and everything is swirling now, and the ambulances and lights swirl round and round above me, and there's a voice and a body holding me, and there's a voice and a body keeping me from turning into a trillion tiny pieces and falling into the ground. I'm here. I'm here, honey. It's okay. I've got you. 62. This is the official report in the Lincoln Journal Star. A Lincoln man, distraught over his debts, attempted to kill his wife and three children. The wife and two youngest sons survived and were found on the back stairwell of the house at approximately 4:45 a.m. The oldest son and father were killed in the altercation. The police were called after neighbors reported shots fired. The two bodies were found dead on arrival on the front landing. The injured son was rushed to the hospital in critical condition. He is now stable after being wounded by a stray bullet. The incident occurred in the Lincoln southeast suburb shortly after 4 a.m. A suicide note left open was found on the kitchen counter. In it, 42-year-old Stephen McDonough expressed remorse about his overwhelming debts and clearly indicated he was sorry he had to take the lives of his wife and children, Police Chief Meyer reported. The victim was identified as 15-year-old Logan McDonough. It is believed he died in an attempt to save the lives of his mother and younger brothers. The father, Stephen McDonough, reportedly had a blood alcohol level of 0.25% when found. The mother and two surviving sons are recovering and receiving both medical and psychiatric treatment after the incident. All condolences, donations, and cards may be sent to St. Mary's Community Hospital, where a fund for the family is being organized. It doesn't say, yeah, that would explain why Logan's dad was always spending tons of money and then acting really weird. It doesn't say, yeah, you know, Logan's dad was actually a total gun freak who had a fucking arsenal of guns and ammo in his basement. enough to hold off an army of zombies for 2 weeks straight, and maybe that's not such a good idea when the guy's obviously got a screw loose. It doesn't say. Yeah, that makes sense why Logan's mom was a raging alcoholic, because you gotta figure that guy was not a good guy to spend your life with. It doesn't say. Thank God there were two sets of steps in that house, so that the mother and those two little boys could hide while Logan thwarted his batshit dad and basically gave his life protecting them, as he'd probably done a million times, a million ways before. It doesn't say, oh, by the way, I was in love with Logan, and now I'll never be able to tell him. And he died not even knowing that, and why the fuck should he have died anyway, just 'cause his dad was a paranoid gun-nut freak? But I know why he died. He died to save his mom and his kid brothers. And that's not fair, either. It doesn't say. Logan's kid brothers looked like little angels in Star Wars pajamas, and that fucking fuckface tried to shoot them dead, and what's the point in God or anything in the universe after that? It doesn't say. God, where the fuck were you last night? 63. I guess my family is really worried about me, because my sisters are both camped out in my room, which is weird considering how much they hate me. They're both just lying there on their beanbags, camped in the corner of my room while I sleep and stare at the ceiling and don't talk to anyone. It's sort of like even though they wrestle me and spit on me and torment me every chance they get, they know this is the kind of thing that might set me off finally, and all the marbles will be lost once and for all. And I will inevitably be carted off in a little white van with guys in white jackets, because we all knew that was coming anyway. Mr. Baum calls from the Bunza Hut, and my mom says I can't make it. She says to stop putting me on the schedule for a little while, which is my mom's way of saying, I'm quitting. She never asked me about it or anything. She just knows. And she's right. It goes without saying that the Bunza Hut and I have parted ways. Lizzie is just sitting there, reading some book about this guy, Darcy, and how everybody thinks he's a dick, but then he turns out to be super fantastic. Nina is painting her nails. Robbie's at football practice, as usual. You could set your clocks by that. But he came in last night and gave me his lucky trophy. Now that's something. That thing is usually in a glass case on lockdown. Every once in a while, Henry pokes his head in. He doesn't say anything. He just looks at my sisters, nods, goes away. Except this morning, he did have something to say, which is absolute Henry. They say they're gonna get all that life insurance, 'cause it wasn't a suicide. Lizzie and Nina look at him, puzzling. Now they're rich. We accept this news in silence. My mom would be sleeping in the bed next to me if she could, but she sees my sisters have taken a keen interest in my well-being, so she's allowing that miracle to transpire. Jared calls a couple of times, but Lizzie just hangs up on him. Nina keeps bringing trashy magazines for me to take my mind off it, which is nice. I really never would have thought my sisters would be so protective of me. Lizzie hasn't spat in my mouth once. The ogre tried to peek in, but my sisters diverted that little plan. My sisters aren't having it. After years of seeing him dote on Robbie, make airplanes with Henry, smile at Nina, tolerate Lizzie, but turn around and every single time, grumble or grouse or disagree with anything and everything I say, including the sky is blue or the world is round, my sisters are not having it today. The ogre does not get halfway down the hall. You gotta hand it to Lizzie. Intimidation is her forte, and Nina just gives me a nod. It's okay, kid. We got this one. And then there's school. Tomorrow's the first day back, and everybody's talking about how there's gonna be a memorial service in the gym. I can picture it now. Becky lives across the street. She'll make it into the Becky tragedy hour. She's probably got the eulogy written, and she'll be crying, talking about her best friend Logan and how she's devastated, how she can't go on without him. She probably has a whole season picked out in black. 64. I don't know why, but the ogre is driving me to school today. I am not happy about it. He doesn't say anything the whole time, and neither do I. I'm not going to say anything if he's not. No way. We pull up to the curb, and I'm about to hop out and get this excruciating drive over with, but he stops me.
Ugh. Annika, I just want to say something.
Okay.
I know you don't like me, and I know you think I don't like you.
Actually, I know you don't like me, so
maybe I just don't know what to say to you.
That was weird. Kinda came out of left field.
I'm a middle-aged man who works all day to keep food on the table for 5 teenagers.
Okay.
And I may not be some smooth operator like your dad, but I'm here, and I'm doing the work, and I love your mom. And I love you, kids. And yeah, that means you too. And I'm really sorry about what happened to your friend.
It's probably because I'm tired, but for some dumb reason, this whole speech at the curb thing is making me sort of misty. I mean, I don't even know where to start.
And I'll try to think of something to say, but honestly, I don't have much in common with a 15-year-old girl. You know?
Well, maybe you could just start with hi or something. He nods.
I love you, kids, and your mom very much. You're all I got.
I guess maybe this whole family massacre incident has got to him, because I could swear he's getting, like, choked up a little. Right here in the car. All right, we got a deal, I guess. He looks up now, still wispy but a little smile. And with that, I turn to go into the school. Well, I sure wasn't expecting that this morning. I mean, that was the last thing I ever thought was gonna happen. You know what I thought, actually? I thought my mom told him about the money, and he was gonna ground me till college. 65. Everybody in the gym is dressed in black, or wearing black armbands, and there's a giant picture of Logan in the back, surrounded by white lilies. There's a big memorial wall, and people have put down candles and flowers and written all sorts of shit like, "Taken too soon," and "God be with you," and "We miss you." There sure are a lot of kind words for someone who, just 2 days ago, was considered a social pariah. But everyone wants a part of this. They want a part of the drama. They want a piece of it. They want to somehow seem meaningful by being closer to it. They were Logan's chemistry partner. They were in Logan's study group. They were Logan's friend. Right now, one of the teachers is up there, a pencil-thin woman in a black woolen skirt, just about to introduce a very special speaker. And would that very special speaker come up to the podium? And that very special speaker is Becky. Of course. Because Becky lived right across the street. Shelley and I sit side by side in the front row while Becky makes her way to the podium. All in black, she is the picture of teenage mourning. Her dress is Gucci, freshly pressed. She dabs her eyes. She looks at the audience. She dabs her eyes again. Some show. She lets out a long sigh and begins.
Logan McDonough was my neighbor, my classmate, my friend. Not many people knew about our strong bond, for it was something precious. More precious than idle gossip. It was so special. He was so special. Not very many people had the opportunity, like I did, to get to see Logan's inner heart. His brilliant thoughts, the way he would see the world in his own amazing, original way. And now, pause, tears. And now, that heart is snuffed out, taken before its time. More tears. Tears enough to float a boat. Tears enough to make the teacher offer to rescue her. But no, Becky holds up her hand. Becky is strong. Becky can do it. Becky is brave. But the truth is, Logan's heart will persevere. His heart will shine forever. Logan, you are eternal now. I love you, Logan. We all do. We will miss you so.
Not a dry eye in the house. Everyone is eating it up. It's like the whole school has amnesia. The teacher gets up again. She is going to introduce the next very special speaker, and that next very special speaker is me. There's a silence, a few coughs, and shifting in seats as I reach the podium. Yes, I'm wearing black too, but I look more like I just crawled out of the laundry machine. I stand at the podium and look out at my classmates. It's got to be about 300 people. The whole school's in here. All that Pound High School has to offer. Even the Heshers, somewhere in the back, by the bleachers. I have an entire speech written about Logan, about who he was and how brilliant he was, and how there will never be anyone like him, and how he was a real-life hero. Everyone is looking up at me, and the teacher nods, an affirming nod. She's trying to tell me I can do it. I can do it. And to hurry up and get to it. Silence. And now I look at the 300 faces. I was in love with Logan McDonough. He was my boyfriend. There's a rustle, and a few looks. He made 2 fake fire drills and left a painting for me in the middle of my art class. In the back, I swear I can hear one of the Heshers. I knew it! I smile to myself. All that seems so far away now. The second fake fire drill? He filled the room with butterflies. I catch Stoner art teacher's eyes, and he nods, and I know it's okay. He knows the truth. I know the truth, and he doesn't care. He even looks kind of moved. Logan was a misfit and a weirdo, and it was like he was made of kryptonite. None of us wanted to touch him, but he wrote me the coolest haiku ever. It was the last thing he gave to me. Everyone's leaning in, including Becky and Shelley, and even the jocks. I take it out and try to hold my hand steady, but I know what it says. Ceaseless. Almost too much for this small frame. You make me part of the sky. There's a silence in the auditorium. It was kind of a secret. Actually, I kept it a secret, 'cause I cared. I cared what everybody thought more than what I thought, or more than my heart thought. And that makes me an idiot. And now I look down at Becky, looking at me, straight off the set of some soap opera scene she's made up in her mind, a scene where she is obviously the star, and we are all just pointless extras. She actually looks annoyed that I'm stealing her thunder. I could cry my face off right now, but something else takes over. Some rush of something rugged, something sick of being soft. I look at Becky for a long time. But now that I'm being honest, Logan McDonough thought Becky Vilhauer was a cunt. And so do I. Shock. Awe. Christians are marrying Romans in the aisles. Hatfields are making out with McCoys. Logan would have laughed his face off to hear that stupid Becky speech, which is the biggest piece of bullshit I've ever heard. The teacher is looking at me like it's time to get off the mic, but that's not happening. Becky just makes shit up, like how Stacy Nolan was pregnant. That was her. She just made it up. For fun. For her own personal amusement. Just for a laugh. I can see Stacy in the audience, turning bright red, and everyone is scuffling and turning in their seats, and not knowing what to do with themselves, because Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and Jesus Christ might as well pop up behind me. She tortured poor Joel Soren on a constant basis, just because one day he wouldn't give her a piece of bubble gum. Bubble gum. And now he gets beat up every day, tortured, all because of a dumb piece of hubba bubba. I catch Jared in the back of the room. He gives me a nod and a half grin. What is he doing here? Oh, and let's not forget she tried to fuck her boyfriend's older brother. Yes, Brad. Becky threw herself at your brother, Jared, at your birthday party. How do I know? Because I was supposed to keep watch for the puppy dog. That's what she called you. I wish you could see Shelley's eyes. And Becky? Becky is about to bum-rush the stage. And finally, while we are on the topic of Jared Klein, yes, I dropped Logan for Jared Klein because, well, for a whole bunch of reasons. But one of them was that Logan wasn't cool, because I cared that everybody thought Logan was a freak. That's something I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life. And yes, it totally sucks, and I'd do anything in the world to get him back. But just to be clear, just to really put it all on the table, Becky warned me that if I didn't drop that loser, meaning Logan, I was done for. So much for Becky's special relationship with Logan. She's full of shit, and Logan was way too good for her. And quite frankly, he was way too good for me, or any of us. Becky is looking at me like my throat may as well already be slit. But here's the thing. Why are we all just acting like idiots and caring what stupid-faced Becky says about this or what so-and-so says about that? None of it matters, right? I mean, does it really fucking matter? Like, when you're 80 years old and on your deathbed, do you really think it's going to make you feel good to know you snickered at the right moment? At whatever thing or outfit or person that, according to Becky Vilhauer, wasn't cool? And what if you're like Logan? What if it all gets taken away, like that, one night out of nowhere? Do you really think any of this bullshit is going to matter? Do you? I mean, what the fuck is wrong with us? Suddenly I realize I might as well be talking to a slab of concrete. Thank you and good night. Silence. Crickets. I look out into a sea of catatonic faces and realize it's over for me. It's over for me, and that's that. I'm going to have to live with a vampire and go to private school back east after all. Except in the back of the hall, I can hear it. A clap. One little clap. And it's Jared Klein. And then Brad stands up. A clap. And then another. Stacy Nolan stands up. One clap. And then another. And then Chip Ryder. And then another. And then Jenny Schnittgrund. And then Joel Soren. And then Charlie Russell. And then the Heschers in the back. And suddenly, the whole auditorium is burst out into applause, and Becky is looking at Shelley, who is not standing. Shelley is sitting next to Becky, like a bag of frozen peas. She looks at me. She looks at Becky. She looks at the entire auditorium full of jocks and brains and heshers and cheerleaders and back at me. And Becky is clinging to her, clinging to her arm like it's the last deck chair on the Titanic. And Shelley stands up. Shelley stands up and starts clapping. And Becky melts into the ground. She melts sideways, like the Wicked Witch of the West, and scuttles out the auditorium door to the side, like a wraith caught in daylight. And this makes everyone clap harder. And for once in its life, Pound High is liberated from the great reign of Becky the Terrible. And suddenly we are all together, emancipated. We are all free. And I get to walk out the door now, walk right out through the middle with my head high, and I don't have to move away or jump off a bridge or anything. I get to walk down through that crowd, right past Jared Klein, who does the best thing ever, because I guess Jared Klein always does the best thing ever, which is, he smiles and tips his trucker cap like I was the greatest show on earth. And I know, right there in that moment, that it's up to me now, that it was always up to me. And who knows, maybe someday? But not now, because now I am out through the front doors and outside to the green grass field spread out in front of me like a magic carpet. And walking across that field, hearing everyone behind me getting quieter and quieter and further away, I make a promise up to the sky, up to Logan and beyond. I won't forget. I won't forget you. I won't let them forget you. I don't know how. I don't even know when or how it could even be possible, but one day, I'll tell everyone about you, and you and me, and what happened, and somehow I'll get to tell the whole world about you, and how you wrote the most beautiful haiku in the world, and I'll make it up to you somehow. Somehow, I'll make it up to you. I promise. And I think about them, too. The R2-D2 socks and Spider-Man sleeper. How Logan had to tell Billy his ankylosaurus had to stay at the foot of the bed to protect him. And I want to throw my arms around Logan for what he did. I want to spin time backward and hold him close, close, and never let go. But that would be like grabbing the light out of the sunset and begging it not to leave the dusk. And if I could, I would do every second of every moment over again if I knew the secret. You get one chance. You get to do this thing one time, and you don't even know when it goes from swirling forward and around in circles to just a plain cold stop and nothing more. Can you believe it? All this time I've spent weighing this and weighing that, worrying about this and worrying about that, living back then and living forward, caring about what so-and-so thinks and about so-and-so, too, but never living here, here, this moment here, never even acknowledging that this moment even exists. And it hits me like a live volt through the chest. This moment here, this is all you get before you are part of the sky. This is Caitlin Davies. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Anatomy of a Misfit by Andrea Portis. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. The director was John McElroy. Executive producer, Caitlin Skyring. Text copyright 2014 by Andrea Portis. Production copyright 2014 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.